Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. There's been controversy in North Carolina, in a certain diocese in North Carolina, the Diocese of Charlotte. There has been an issue pertaining to a proposed document by the local bishop, but broadening beyond traditionis custodis, and therefore anywhere from suppressing the practice of the traditional Latin Mass to even traditional practices in other liturgies across the diocese. The document was leaked, and it was revealed that the local bishop had also planned to ban the use of Latin, altar rails, and, like I mentioned, other traditional deemed practices in all diocesan liturgies. We're joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen to talk about this. I just want to give all of us a little bit of a background to what's happening there. Bishop Michael Martin of Charlotte, he proposed the restrictions in a leaked draft of new liturgical norms. It was first made public by a blog, Rorate Caeli, on May the 28th, and then the National Catholic Register confirmed it. And in his document, he proposed new norms, including barring worship and traditional prayers at the foot of the altar, including the St. Michael prayer. But his intention was touted as purifying and unifying the celebration of the Mass. So it's in the interest of unity and concord. And so we talk about this. We talk about what has happened since this document has been leaked, and whether the touted purpose, the intended purpose of unity, has been achieved thus far pertaining to this document. We go on from there to speak with Nathaniel Blake. The sexual revolution claimed to offer happiness. It promised the greatest sex that historical man had ever known, but Americans today are increasingly lonely and unhappy. They even report having less and less satisfying sexual encounters. And it's been a disaster. The entire revolution has been a revolt and a disaster. More than 50 years since then, the victims of this great revolt against natural law is all around us. Abortion, fatherless homes, women who are used and abused, and men who are incapable of true intimate relationships. And so we talk about all of this, how the sexual liberation has hurt all of us. All of this after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, May 29th. It's the Solemnity of the Ascension. And today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. President Trump's tariffs are getting shot down once again. The U.S. Court of International Trade ruled that an emergency law does not give Trump authority to impose tariffs on nearly every country. Today, a U.S. district judge upheld the ruling after the Justice Department appealed. The DOJ says it will go all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary. The White House is calling on Jill Biden to testify to Congress over an alleged cover-up involving her husband, former President Joe Biden. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt claimed Thursday the former First Lady is still lying to the American people about what she knew about her husband's health while in office. Her comments come as House Republicans ramp up investigations into Biden's health and mental state while president. Elon Musk says he's exiting the White House and Doge. The billionaire posted on X that as his time as special government employee comes to an end, he'd like to thank President Trump for the opportunity to reduce wasteful spending. Musk has helped lead the Department of Government Efficiency since it was established in January. And two tiny Texas towns are being terrorized by killer bees. They're both about 2 hours west of Dallas. Police say a man in Eastland, who was mowing his yard, was swarmed. He hopped into his car to speed away, but the bees followed him, stinging him to death. Also, in the neighboring town of Comanche, a swarm of Africanized bees attacked and killed three prized rodeo horses. Police there say millions of bees swarmed the owner, who survived the attack. And with your Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Controversy in a North Carolina diocese has broadened beyond traditional Latin Mass restrictions after it was revealed that the local bishop had also planned to ban the use of Latin altar rails and other seemingly traditional practices in all diocesan liturgies. Dr. Matthew Bunsen joins us with details. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Matthew, always a joy. Thank you for making the time once again.
Yeah, great to be with you. And as always, the news simply doesn't stop.
We'll get to that classical music segment one day.
Someday, yes.
So you know what we can do? Maybe we can just meet up and play records of classical music. I think that's how we'll wind up doing it.
I think that's a good solution, actually.
So it's unfortunate the document was leaked, which the moment any document is leaked without its formal promulgation, it already comes surrounded by a tremendous amount of speculation and controversy. And so this is no different. Just shed some light on Bishop Michael Martin, his intent, and what the document is purported to have said.
Yeah, well, first, by way of some background, Bishop Martin is a member of the Franciscan Conventuals. Mm-hmm. He's 63 years old. He has been a bishop there for about a year. So he was appointed in April of last year and actually installed exactly a year ago today on May 29th, 2024. So he's fairly new in terms of his service as a bishop there. And I think this took people, many, many people, by surprise, especially because, as far as I'm aware, there had not been much discussion in the diocese previous to this in terms of the implementation, for example, of Traditionis Custodes. So the fact that it was leaked, I think, certainly from Bishop Martin's perspective, mm-hmm. Was most unfortunate. But certainly the dimensions of the decree that he was looking at or considering implementing can be described as broad and, frankly, granular mm-hmm. in the requirements that he was apparently considering imposing on the diocese with respect not just to the traditional Latin Mass, but even it's very clear that he had ideas on bringing certain reforms even to the Novus Ordo, which, of course, is the standard Mass that we use for Catholics today.
And I have to be very honest, a cursory overview of the information from the leaked document is difficult to understand, to put mildly. His suggestion of not praying the St. Michael's Prayer after Mass, not kneeling at the altar rails, obviously, but also not kneeling at the foot of the altar in prayer. So shed some light on an attempt at understanding his intent for concord and unity.
Yeah, I think what he was trying to do, and obviously I can't speak for the bishop in this case, mm-hmm. but I think one of the things that this was an effort to try to bring some sort of liturgical unity to the diocese. He had apparently reached the conclusion that it was not being celebrated consistently or uniformly across the diocese. Mm-hmm. The question at hand, though, is, was this the potentially correct mechanism to bring about that unity? The other aspect, too, is that a number of the requirements that he was looking at proposing seem, at least at first blush, to run contrary to what are the standing directives or requirements for the celebration of Mass. Mm-hmm. For example, beyond just the traditional Latin Mass, he talks about the fact that he is calling for the Latin language not to be used widely in any sense, even though the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has said very clearly that care should be taken to foster the role of Latin in the liturgy.
Yep.
especially because the goal is to deepen familiarity with the Latin language. And of course, people in social media, as they are always going to, even went a step beyond that, saying, so is the Kyrie eleison now supposedly banned? So does it extend to Greek?
Greek as well, yes.
And potentially Hebrew, if we're talking about the, can we say amen? Is that now also
Can we say Abba? Yeah, that's right. That's a good question.
So we also have the question of things like just the arrangement of candles, where he talks about the candles are to be arranged around the altar. He doesn't want basically altars to be blocked in any way by candles, and yet the general instruction of the Roman Missal does not forbid placing candles at the front of the altar. So it raises a lot of questions about how this would be or could be implemented and just how far this can actually go in trying to revolutionize or reform not just the traditional Latin Mass, but also the Novus Ordo itself.
Yeah. And the news from the Pillar Catholic is that the document itself has been quote-unquote shelved in the meantime. Now, could you help shed light on what that means?
Well, what I think it means is that this was a draft, and again, in fairness to the bishop, this was a leaked draft. And I think you said something really important right at the start of our conversation here, that we don't know what state of a draft this was. Mm-hmm. We don't know how serious he was about implementing it, that sort of thing. But the fact that he is apparently not at this point planning to implement it tells you that I think the reaction has been so very sharp.
Yes.
And clearly there was enough unhappiness in reaction to the draft of this document that someone or people, and we don't know how many leaked drafts were made, that certainly members of the presbyterate, members perhaps of the presbyteral council, mm-hmm. we don't know exactly the nature of the leak because of the fact that this was a leaked document, that there was a very, very sharp reaction. So it extended first in the diocese, and then, of course, as one would completely expect, given where we are today, it exploded into social media. And it has now, in some ways, international dimensions, because the question of what is going to happen to Traditionis Custodes under this new pontificate of Leo XIV is one of those overhanging questions.
And
the draft itself mentions Pope Francis, but it does so also in the present tense. So the obvious assumption is that this was drafted at a time when we were still in the pontificate of Pope Francis.
Yeah.
So does this reflect what could be the new liturgical style or the wishes of Pope Leo XIV? We can't answer that because we don't have any information in that regard.
And so, as a final consideration, one of the issues that Traditionis Custodes did, in fact, create, if its implementation is followed to the letter, is those parishes that have become liturgical havens and homes for the numerous families that find solace, that find liturgical placement, if you will, in the TLM, will now have to travel well outside of their bounds to those limited places where the TLM is offered. And so it would appear that the Bishop of Charlotte, Michael Martin, is going to isolate the TLM to be offered in one chapel in Charlotte.
Right, which is fairly consistent that we have seen in those dioceses under those bishops or archbishops who really have taken the path of cracking down, to use that euphemism, on the traditional Latin Mass, where you make it very difficult, if nigh unto impossible, for families or faithful to attend the traditional Latin Mass. In other dioceses, of course, we have seen a very different set of approaches to Traditionis Custodes. We have had some who have been fairly broad in their interpretation of it, others who have essentially left the issue alone. So each bishop, I think, has been implementing it in their own way. All of us are waiting on this and many other issues for where Pope Leo XIV is going to fall on this.
Thank you, Matthew. We are continuing this conversation on the other side of the break. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Another year has come and gone, and whether you like it or not, Uncle Sam requires you to make an accounting.
Perhaps it's time to call Myler and Zipka. They work with you to legally minimize your tax bill and identify ways to reduce future taxes. Eliminate the nagging feeling that you're paying more taxes than you need to. Call Ken Zipka today at 734-930-5500. Myler and Zipka. Integrity, excellent value, and people dedicated to a long-term relationship. 734-930-5500.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. We're talking about church news and current events in light of church teaching. Matthew, I'd like to pivot now to just talk about the Washington bishops suing over that law that forces them to violate the seal of the confessional. We've talked about its development in the past, and where are we now with this issue?
Yeah, this is the one that you're absolutely right. We have discussed this and similar bills that have, for whatever reason, chosen to try to go down a road in which priests would be forced to break the seal of the sacrament of confession as a result of mandatory reporting of abuse in different states. It's in some ways remarkable to me that they continue to try to float these. In part because, as far as I'm aware, and I'm sure the legal experts on this can weigh in far more than I can, but this has previously withstood significant constitutional scrutiny, and that the seal itself tends to be inviolable, certainly as far as a lot of courts are concerned. Right. In this particular case, the state legislature had a bill introduced to it that lists clergy to the list of mandatory abuse reporters. But does not include any exemption for information learned in the confessional. So that's the key element in there. And this was signed, basically, or is supported by Governor Bob Ferguson of the state of Washington, who is himself Catholic.
And that presents not just the concern of the matter, but added scandal to the issue that one touts the name of Catholic and stands so firmly against a very sacred institution of the practice of the sacrament. I have to say, our bishops, our priests have been stalwart heroes in their positions in response. Bishop Thomas Daly of Spokane was very clear that he and his fellow pastors were willing to go to jail to protect the sanctity of the seal of the confessional.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And so the bishops of Washington State, starting with the Archbishop of Seattle, have launched a lawsuit because they have to. They really don't have any choice but to embark on some sort of legal relief from this. And as you say, the shepherds, priests, and bishops are committed to keeping that seal of confession, as they say, even to the point of going to jail. And what is especially interesting is that there was a version of this very bill back, I think, 2 years ago that had a carve-out, as they say, that it was a type of exemption for those allegations that are learned solely as a result of confession. Priests themselves are required by canon law, so let's be clear about that too, that they must hold that to be inviolable. And they are subject to immense penalties should they violate that. And in fact, one of the braviora delicta, which is the most serious of the penalties or crimes that can be committed canonically, is the violation of the seal of confession.
You'll have to refresh my memory here, but I believe it's a late sententiae if there is a violation of the seal.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, it's simply having done the deed itself, you are automatically excommunicated. So that's how seriously church law, you know, canon law, takes this, and how willing and committed a priest must be to go to jail rather than violate that. So it puts clergy in a very difficult position, and I think this is precisely why we'll see what sort of legal relief that the Archdiocese of Washington has, but also the other dioceses who are going to be impacted by this in the state of Washington. So credit goes to them for doing really what is necessary in order to protect this all-important right.
The Archdiocese of Seattle, but also, like we mentioned earlier, Diocese of Spokane with Bishop Thomas Daly and the Diocese of Yakima, they've all filed this lawsuit against Washington. And if I may ask for just a bit of consideration on the level of the constitutional reality of this, you've got First Amendment, 14th Amendment violations, but also Washington Constitution that's being violated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's an infringement on multiple levels for those who are trying to have the exercise of religion. As you say, it's protected by the First Amendment. You also have the protection clause, equal protection clause of the 14th Amendment, and then the Washington Constitution. So we have seen similar bills like this being pushed forward, but usually common sense has prevailed in some fashion that has prevented this. Now, it's also worth noting that the Department of Justice under the Trump administration, which was also concerned about this law, declared this essentially an anti-Catholic measure. And so we are looking now on the federal side. And while there are obvious disagreements on the part of the U.S. bishops in some areas of policy with the Trump administration, I'm thinking in particular of immigration, they have, I think, found considerable assistance on the part of the Trump administration in opposing and even investigating outright what we had seen over these last years is a type of creeping anti-Catholicism in certain government departments. Certainly that's been the claim. And in this particular piece, the U.S. Justice Department, in particular the U.S. Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, calls this, quote, a legislative attack on the Catholic Church and the Sacrament of Confession. So there are going to be quite a few elements of close federal scrutiny, but then also from the classic organizations that have spoken out on this. I think, for example, the Beckett Fund, First Liberty, and various other ones.
If I may pivot, as usual, you and I run out of time, but just very quickly, just so that we can get ahead of the story, the desecration of Paderborn in Germany, the sanctuary and the dancing with the rotisserie chickens, and just shed some light on the response that's been given. Clearly the thing happened, it's making the waves, and I think it's important we at least know what happened.
Yeah, well, what this specifically was a cultural performance. that was a Westfalen side story in the Paderborn Cathedral. And I won't get into too many graphic details, but essentially a half-naked man and a woman danced clearly in the cathedral. The man, as I said, was shirtless with plucked chickens wrapped in diapers, I think is the politest way that we can put it. They then performed some sort of a cavalcade and used the animals to sort of do a dead walk with the chickens. It's so insane that it sounds at first comical until you realize just how ugly this was when you have seen the event. What is especially alarming about it, though, is that very high-ranked political figures were in attendance, and it's my understanding that the Archbishop of Paderborn was also in attendance. So a lot of people there are very unhappy with what has taken place here. And it comes on the heels of two things. First is it's pointed out in social media that on the one hand we have, for example, this proposed crackdown of Traditionis Custodes, of the traditional Latin Mass, of people who just want to celebrate Mass reverently. And then this happens in a place like Paderborn in Germany, where the archdiocese itself seems to be, quote, distancing itself from this. But a lot of people are demanding a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But this also comes at a time when the German Synodal Way is pushing ahead with its proposals to unravel church authority, church teaching on sexuality and the ordination of women. So this type of an event, this cultural event, couldn't come at a worse time for German Catholics.
Yep. And in this odd phase of the passing of Pope Francis and now the election of Pope Leo, this is going to warrant some level of response. So, Matthew, thank you. Thank you so much for your time made here.
Great to be with you. God bless.
My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift from our day sponsor, the Barak family, in honor of the 10-year anniversary of the passing of Chris Barak, beloved husband, father, and grandfather. Chris loved his wife Emily, his family, Huron Valley Catholic School, Christ the King Parish, and Michigan sports. He's deeply missed and would want everyone listening to give their life to Jesus.
Transform your yard with Rutherford Gardens, where faith meets nature. Serving Washtenaw County, they specialize in residential landscaping, stonework, and ornamental plant design. From patios to peaceful garden sanctuaries, they craft outdoor spaces that reflect the beauty of God's creation. Call 734-476-7600 or visit RutherfordGardens.com. Rutherford Gardens, faith and beauty taking root.
If you're still on the fence about purchasing a new air conditioner, just know that prices are expected to increase by 25% over the next year due to EPA standards. Don't wait.
Hi, I'm Ron Garmo with Running Right Heating and Cooling. Call us today for a free quote on a new air conditioning system and all your heating and cooling needs. Mention Ave Maria Radio and get a 10% discount.
Call today, 248-884-1704, or go to runningrighthvac.com to schedule an appointment.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
When one has real love for another, not mere emotional attachment, that one moves out of the isolation of his own existence to know the other's thoughts, emotions, sufferings, and even beyond this, to know the other's reality. The illusion, though, is that loving is a natural capacity, easily and automatically acquired. This is an illusion reinforced by the popular concept of falling in love, a term implying a complete lack of volition. Fundamentally, though, the notion of love's facility is not true, for the whole process of coming out of ourselves is not easy or automatic. Now especially, in our climatically controlled, screen-dominated worlds, we exist within our own spaces, within our own minds, and those who are the most difficult to see become the most difficult to love. GuadalupeWorkers.org.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The sexual revolution promised happiness and great sex, but Americans are reported as becoming increasingly lonely and unhappy. They even report having less and less satisfying sex. Rather than providing fulfilling pleasure, quote-unquote sexual liberation has created a relational wasteland in which men and women are alienated from each other in the name of individual pleasure. We're joined by Nathaniel Blake to talk about this. Nathaniel Blake is the author of Victims of the Revolution, How Sexual Liberation Hurt Us All. He's also a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Nathaniel, great to speak with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I want to open by addressing something that our mutual friend Brad Wilcox, but you also cite Wendy Wang in noting that it's those people who have not espoused the narratives, the philosophical narratives and ideological pushes of the sexual revolution that continue to have thriving, not just interpersonal, intimate relationships, but also married couples, sexual encounters. And it would be easy to say, therefore, the church was right, the scriptures were right all along. But there's a grander narrative that the revolution was attempting to divorce man from natural law, and we're reaping its fruits now. So just shed some light on the topic from there.
Yeah, so simply put is that Christianity teaches us that God designed us to live in a certain way, that we were meant to live according to the natural law, which even in our fallen state, we can still apprehend portions of through our natural reason. And for most of us, our vocations are towards marriage and family, and that is where we find fulfillment, that is where we find deep relationships and meaning and purpose in this life. And it's also where we find flourishing. So by following the natural law, we avoid the pitfalls of sin, and we then make these connections that are fulfilling both in the immediate, fairly basic senses of meeting sexual desire within marriage, but also in elevating us to a relationship that cannot be had without deep commitment, without an investment of time, without the total giving of the self.
Yep. And that's precisely the reason why, when you consider works of people like Stefan Zweig and his ilk, who tout that these sexual norms and moralities that govern the sexual encounter between man and woman in marriage are repressive rather than grounding them in true freedom, and you create this kind of a narrative. It's very clear that this narrative was pushed without ever considering the long-term ramifications.
Yes, I think that's correct. It's a short-term narrative for a short-term perspective. And in the ultimate long-term perspective, of course, for a Christian is looking forward to our union with Christ in the eschaton, where we see the wedding feast of the Lamb, the union of the church and of Christ, described as a wedding, as a marriage. But again, in this life, if you look at what will tend to fulfill us, and of course there are many trials that may come upon us, it's not a certainty, but it is a probability that following these the divine plan for our lives is more likely to leave us fulfilled and happier, and it's certainly less self-destructive.
Right. And a lot of this has been the overflowing result of what the sexual revolution pushed to do, amongst other things. There were a lot of ideological pushes. It wasn't just one core push. But amongst other things, one of the core ideological pushes was the desacralization of the sexual encounter, reducing it to nothing more than a biological, physiological activity. And therefore, what we've seen is the result of taking that which is sacred and desecrating it.
Yes, and that's what the Apostle Paul talked about when he is so revolted at the idea of, you know, shall I unite the members of Christ with a prostitute?
Right.
Because from a Christian perspective, sex matters, and our identification as believers with Christ means that to violate the norms that we have been given is a violation of Christ. And again, it comes back to marriage as something that is both very fundamental for us in this life. It is the basic building block of civilization, the family, mother, father, children. And at the same time, it also points us to that which is highest in this life and in that to come. And of course, there are these special cases of those called to vocations of chastity, and that they begin to, in a more perhaps profound way, this union with Christ in that vocation more deeply in this life. But for most of us who are called to marriage, it's, again, foundational, but it's also the pinnacle. It's where we go through the mundane elements of life, and it is also where we see glimpses of our union ultimately with God as we love Him and know Him and enjoy Him forever in the beatific vision.
And that's part of the problem with an overtly secularized culture, a culture that has embraced a kind of secular religiosity. It functions as if the transcendent isn't also at once somehow imminent. In other words, you can't live the sacred in this life, so just live as secular as possible. And this reminds me of where you wrote in your book about the great pitfall of modern Protestantism, mainline Protestantism, in believing that what the church had to say didn't have a bearing on the function of culture. You know, Christians should keep their beliefs to themselves. And the fact is, you're dealing with very sacred realities, even by secular individuals who don't embrace Judeo-Christian worldviews. And so people like David French were flat out wrong in their assertion, despite their influence.
Yes, and I'm sorry to have to pick on David French. I've done it a few other times, but his withdrawal, I mean, he's a very prominent figure. He's at the New York Times now, and his sort of withdrawal from the public arena in terms of what he thinks Christianity should do, he said that, well, he still personally is a believer. He sounds like, you know, old blind Catholic politicians on the Democrat side. I'm personally pro-life, but I'll be professionally pro-choice. He's sort of done that with same-sex marriage. He seems to have done it with transgenderism and gender ideology. But no, if we love our neighbor, then a right understanding of the natural law means that we cannot abandon reality and leave it subjective, because these are not simply idiosyncratic religious beliefs that we're imposing on people. No, this is the fundamental order of existence.
Right.
Men and women are meant for each other in a lifelong union. That's not ceremonial, mumbo jumbo. That's our fundamental anthropology as human beings.
Yep.
And to ignore that in public policy and in culture is to fail to love our neighbor as ourselves.
And Nathaniel, you highlighted a very crucial point there, because ignoring that, in fact, I dare say more than ignoring, but willfully rejecting it, creates a mechanized caricature of the sexual act. So we are sold this facade that the people behind the camera are loving what they're doing, but as your research rightly highlights, for many of them, this was anywhere from the lowest level a chore to, at the highest level, a tremendous burden that they felt they had to keep feeding into this terrible enterprise machine.
Yes, and something I kept running into from secular sources. I was kind of surprised to learn that Paris Hilton, who for years was this sort of symbol of liberation and glamour and, you mm-hmm. know, kind of rich, vapid, you know, blonde bombshell, but anyway, you know, just surprised to learn that for years, apparently she regarded sex as a chore, but she said that.
Yep.
And then you have people like Christine Emba doing reporting and finding that this same sort of experience is repeated again and again for young women.
So let's pause there, Nathaniel. My guest is Nathaniel Blake, author of Victims of the Revolution, How Sexual Liberation Hurts Us All. Continuing on the other side, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
When I heard other business owners say they finally found someone in the credit card industry they can trust, I wondered how he could help me. So when Mark from Schisler CPC offered to show me where all the money goes for credit card processing with a free analysis of my business, I jumped on it. He reviewed how the industry works, where we could save, and offered a no-contract guarantee on savings and excellent customer service. I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. Schisler CPC. Trust in them.
More information available on the Ave Maria website under Sponsor Business Directory.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Hi, Vanessa Denha-Garmo here, inviting you to tune into Epiphany. We're made to praise God and celebrate our faith. I want to encourage listeners to connect, communicate, and collaborate with the faith community. Life is a journey, and along the way, we have those Epiphany moments that bring us closer to Christ. Please partner with me and celebrate the diversity of our Catholic Church.
Epiphany, weekdays at noon, only on Ave Maria Radio.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Spring into mowing season with a new Cub Cadet lawn tractor from Weingarts. We've been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment since 1945. Cub Cadet XT Enduro Series tractors are engineered to offer the best combination of quality, value, and performance. Cub Cadet lawn and garden tractors offer comfort and year-round versatility. Stop by our stores to help find your next Cub Cadet or visit us online at Weingarts.com. From our family to yours, thank you for letting us serve you.
Weingarts, Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
Catholic Charities of Shiawassee and Genesee Counties have been providing help and creating hope since 1941. It's the generosity of donors that allows them to provide necessary services such as their warming center, which provides refuge and comfort to thousands in our community. They also offer hot meals in their soup kitchens and help families make ends meet in their community closet. Even the smallest donation makes a meaningful difference. Join us in their mission by giving a donation at CatholicCharitiesFlint.org.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Pete. I'm speaking with Nathaniel Blake, author of Victims of the Revolution, How Sexual Liberation Hurts Us All. And Nathaniel, we were talking earlier about particular figures who, on the other side of the camera, portray this caricatured front that the hypersexualization that they sell their own bodies into is something they relish, enjoy, and savor, when the truth of the matter in their own statements is far from what they present.
Yes. So one example I was really surprised to learn in writing this book and researching that Paris Hilton, who was sort of the sexualized blonde reality TV bimbo, portrayed herself as that, actually didn't enjoy sex for years and regarded it as a chore. And I think the reason for that is that she wasn't with anyone who loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that is recreated across not just celebrity culture, but many young women seem to really be not enjoying this supposedly liberated culture.
Right. Catherine Kirsten's 2019 essay that you bring up highlights what I believe has seeped into the cultural water, the socio-political water, so to speak, that the imposition is women, girls grow up believing that as they become women, they have to be constantly sexually available for casual encounters. And that's the modern definition of womanhood. And conversely, if I may add to her insight, men, boys are brought up to believe that the mark of manhood is to constantly engage in meaningless, frequent sexual encounters. And so I remember teaching high school in this language of what's your body count is something that the high school students are saying. That's a terrible way to think about, firstly, the gift of your own body, but also in juxtaposition, the bodies of the people you're encountering, because there's something sacred at play here that's completely denigrated.
Yes, there is. And it's also worth noting just how self-defeating this approach is.
Right.
As we talked about earlier, it's married Christian couples who attend church who report having more and more satisfying sex. And the reason for that is because commitment leads both to, one, someone to have as a sexual partner at the very basic level, but also it leads to a genuine love and concern and care for the other person that then manifests itself in your sex life. And Christians are in an interesting position in that, on the one hand, we believe that our sex lives and marriage is not the most important part of our lives, of our marriage. And yet, at the same time, we also recognize that it is sacred and it is important to giving of oneself to the other in love. So it's somehow we don't take it as seriously in the sense of it's not the end of life, the be-all and end-all of existence, but we can also take it seriously in the sense that we recognize how important it is, and that's because we believe the human person is important.
Right. And that's why, with this abject proliferation of access to pornography, down to the most perverse and hardcore versions of it, the appeal is in some sense waning, and you consider platforms like OnlyFans, this ardent hunger and desire to have a relationship, that connection that's meaningful, is what OnlyFans preys on. It plays on that, and it feeds it in this pseudo-intimate relationship. Both are left wanting, both are left empty, but that's the appeal behind it.
Yes, and it was interesting to me, as I was reading articles from the New York Times, for instance, known as a bastion of sexual conservatism, but explaining the business model and explaining what's happening in the pornography industry, where on the one hand, it is becoming in many ways more violent, more degrading.
Right.
And yet it's also developed this odd secondary side where it's a substitute relationship where you'll have women, or in many cases, someone pretending to be that woman because the customer service gets subcontracted out, but sending messages and so on to customers, and it is sort of a pseudo relationship,
mm-hmm.
and not in neither case is this good and healthy or conducive to well-being and happiness.
Right. All it does is it facilitates use on both sides, and so the pleasure principle is fulfilled for the moment, but in the end, all are left wanting, lacking, and ultimately spiraling down misery. And this leads us into that conversation of what abortion has become. We can talk about it as the fight for life in the womb, and rightly so. But if we don't address the desacralization of the body and the sexual gift that God has given male and female, that's only ever going to be one side of the argument and equation.
Yes, and so, first of all, abortion is overwhelmingly a problem of people not being married.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Anderson, our president at Ethics and Public Policy Center, has been saying in First Things and elsewhere that abortion happens because people aren't married, and he points to the statistics showing just how few abortions are done when you have a husband and wife who are married and have a pregnancy, and it's very few statistically, still more than we'd like because even one is too many, but overwhelmingly abortion is about people who are not committed to each other still having sex with each other, and it's also about a devaluation of womanhood.
Right.
Insofar as women are taught that their fertility is an enemy, they are taught to view themselves as almost defective men,
right,
who in order to compete in a world need to become sterile, who need to be able to have the same casual attitude towards sex and the same lack of responsibility towards sex that men who are cads, to use an old word, have.
Right. And like you rightly highlight, there's a kind of almost Kierkegaardian complaint yell into the void, complaining about the rules of natural law that revolt against us. Because, and this is what's not highlighted that I'm really glad you brought up in your book, the sexual revolution was a violent movement. And we don't think of it that way because we don't want to acknowledge it for what it is. But tell us why it is.
Well, abortion is the violence inherent in the sexual revolution,
mm-hmm.
because the sexual revolution does not work without abortion, without the ability to bloodily, violently get rid of the tiny human lives that arise as they are meant to from human sexuality. You can't have a sexual revolution. You can't have this ideal of a carefree existence of casual encounters
mm-hmm.
with men and women hooking up however they feel like, and it doesn't have to mean anything. Because, well, of course, sex is personal. It happens between persons, and it begets new persons. And only by violently erasing that can the sexual revolution be plausible.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that violence has repercussions all throughout relationships between men and women. It shapes our culture, shapes our self-understanding, and ultimately it's a degradation of our humanity. As I've said, like, abortion hardens the parts. It doesn't stop.
Yeah. And you would think that we would have stopped at the depravity of becoming the authors of our eventual extinction by means of killing our progeny. But we didn't stop there. We then had to take it steps further into virtually complete misanthropy. And now castration, this entire transgender movement hinges upon the willful destruction of otherwise healthy reproductive faculties. And so you're highlighting the story of Chloe as one such example.
Yes, Chloe Cole, who's one of the most prominent detransitioners,
mm-hmm.
who was surgically mutilated at 15 years old, she was still a child, but was given a double mastectomy mm-hmm. because she thought she was a boy. And we're seeing progress on this issue, thankfully, but there is still a lot of resistance and a long way to go. And what connects all of this is the denial of natural law and the denial that our bodies have any intrinsic meaning. The same ideology that says who you sleep with doesn't matter because your bodies don't really matter except for the subjective pleasure you get from them also then says, well, you can reshape your bodies according to your subjective desire. They, again, don't right. have any intrinsic purpose or meaning.
You know, as a fellow appreciator, I picked up the quotes of the rise and triumph of the modern self in your book. And as a fellow appreciator of Truman's, frankly, seminal work, I have to say that the moment we willingly jettisoned objective morality to everything pertaining to the human body, the foundations of truth, sexuality, it's no wonder we started this spiral. So first with the validation of the LGBTQ movement and sex can be whatever you want, whenever you want, redefining marriage, and now the trans movement, and we're not going to stop there. You would think that we would have stopped at some point, but the depravity is going to continue.
I think it will, and yes, Carl Truman, just side note, wonderful and just honored to have him as a colleague. He's a great mm-hmm. intellect, but I will say it won't stop except, one, we can hope for God's grace, and two, we can also hope that the harms, which is what I spend a lot of this book on, of the sexual revolution prompt of reevaluation. Because I do turn to a hopeful note, which is that there is a better way to live.
Right.
And that is what Christians can offer the world right now. The people who are left empty by the sexual revolution may have hope for something better.
Yep. And that is the true liberation, to live as we ought, not the freedom to do whatever we want. Nathaniel, thank you very much. Real honor to have spoken with you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest, Nathaniel Blake, author of Victims of the Revolution, How Sexual Liberation Hurts Us All, published by Ignatius Press. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.